This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Todd is out with a sore throat, and so Chance is stepping in once again. Really thrilled you're back on. Thanks for joining, man.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't think I'd be back on so soon.
I didn't either, but all good. We're wishing Todd a speedy healing, but that just means we get a cool couple of car debates. Chance drops in to suggest some new options, so that'll be fun. But we've got a lot to talk about up front, specifically when you reminded me of the BMW M5 Touring that's coming to the U.S. That press release was announced in early April 2024. Mm-hmm. Why was I not aware of this?
I don't know.
Why did I not know this until now?
I don't have an answer for
it's
that
It's a month old for the press release, but holy cow, it's got the M Hybrid powertrain, which apparently is closely related to the one found in the BMW M Hybrid V8 GTP race car, which is anything related to the race car.
Yeah.
That's a good
it's
thing.
Always cool.
Always cool. But they're freaking bringing the Touring to the U.S. Like, everybody get excited. We've wanted the wagons. We've wanted the Tourings. Like, hello, this is, they're doing it.
Yeah,
they've listened. We have to buy this thing, although I'm sure it's going to be bloody expensive.
Probably. I imagine there will be a six-figure price tag on that, you think?
BMW M Hybrid powertrain promises top-tier performance to go with what? Remarkable spaciousness.
Remarkable.
Why are we not selling wagons based on remarkable spaciousness? Oh yeah, I forgot. Wagons have just as much space as an SUV, and in some cases,
sometimes more.
The seating position is better and it has more space. Why are wagons so uncool? But maybe this will make
ride height, I guess,
cool again or something. This is episode 896. Number 900 is coming soon. We'll be doing a live stream and we'll be asking for your questions. That is coming May 23rd, 2024 for release on the 24th on that Friday. And also for listeners who are local to Utah, a reminder tomorrow, Saturday, May 11th, 2024 from 10 a.m. to noon. Our friends at Complete Detail Solutions are hosting a car show featuring Griot's Garage products, and you can get a sneak preview of Todd's new car.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be cool. That is 654 West Fine Drive, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84119, Complete Detail Solutions. Come see Griot's Garage products and come see Todd's new car. It's going to be pretty cool. And finally, the Beartooth Highway Adventure has been announced and sold out in mere minutes.
That's so amazing.
Which is so amazing. Thanks to our patrons for their support. And if you'd like to become a patron, go to patreon.com, search for Everyday Drivers so you can get early access to announcements and also registration for adventures like that. And this is our big one, the Beartooth Highway in Wyoming, and it goes up into Montana. It's going to be a spectacular drive.
Yeah.
You can see that road. If you've missed this adventure, you can see that road featured in our Cars of the Past when we took the Z car and my 928 up there. At almost 11,000 feet mm-hmm. is the crest. And it is spectacular.
Like
better than Yellowstone.
At that peak, there's a spot where you can, it's not even much of a hike. There's like a parking area just up the hill from the sign, the elevation sign.
Mm-hmm.
You go up there and you can look down at the road you just came up. And to me, it's like looking down the American Stelvio Pass. It is amazing.
Yes, good point. It's amazing. So keep watch, become a patron. We'd love to have you and sure appreciate you sharing the podcast.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Todd and I have been asked many times over the years what shoes we wear when we drive, whether it be on track, for canyon roads, or even around town. So we're very pleased to announce a partnership with Chicane Racing. My connection is personal to the founder, John Connolly, who bought my 987 Cayman a decade ago. I really miss that car. It was truly special. It's just amazing to me that John drove it for a few years, founded Chicane Racing with my neighbor, Scott, who happens to be John's driving coach, obtained his racing license, now campaigns a Cayman GT4 Club Sport MR, and shows us all how it's done. The Chicane team has over 100 years of footwear creation experience at major brands and has a strong passion for motorsports. They've designed all the shoes to perform at the highest level to meet the demands of competition driving. All Chicane styles are handmade of the highest quality materials and workmanship and offer unmatched fit and comfort with an emphasis on pedal feel. When you're shopping for Speedsters, Sebrings, or a GT class shoe at chicaneracing.com, use the code DRIVER24 for a 15% discount off retail plus a $10 flat shipping charge on all shoes. Chicane, the soul of racing. Cool couple of car debates.
Mm-hmm.
One's long and one's short. We've got Tyler, who is writing to us from Western Pennsylvania, and he is and his significant other are powder hounds looking for a commuter. Tyler, thank you so much for writing. He is a longtime listener, first time writing, and looking for suggestions to replace his fiance's 2016 Porsche Macan S. They bought it in February of 2022 with a CPO warranty, just put under 40,000 miles on it to date. And they didn't expect to keep it longer than the CPO warranty covered, which was 2 years, unlimited miles. Their plans changed and they extended it to November 2025 or 120,000 miles, whichever comes first.
Which does make me wonder, is that 40,000 miles that they've put on it personally? Or is that what's on the odometer? I'm a little unclear on that. I'm guessing that's what they've put on.
We'll go with that. I think it was whatever was on the odometer, and then they've put on 40,000. So maybe they're getting close to that end of warranty, but they need something for commuting because Tyler's fiance loves it. She just got a new job requiring her to travel between hospitals within a 250-mile radius with little to no notice. And so Tyler would like her to get something more economical to run that is still comfortable and still somewhat fun to drive. He had a Cobb 93 octane tune and an axle back exhaust, which he said woke up the car, of course.
Would, yeah. Know,
more enjoyable to drive, probably sounds better too. And it doesn't impact the fuel economy too much, but again, it's just enough. So they're writing to us to consider what else could they buy. His fiance's favorite features of the Macan are the power, the exhaust sound, and the sound system. Her previous cars include an 08 Sonata, a Ford Edge, a 4Runner, 06 Xterra. Whatever happened to all those yellow Xterras?
That is a great question. I was just wondering that.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, a yellow. Oh, it's an SUV.
Those are like huge when they first came out. They
were huge. She had an STI hatch that Tyler talked her into trying. And she claims to have liked the STI, but didn't drive it nearly as much as Tyler had hoped because she was intimidated by the manual transmission. But other than that, she despises hatchbacks and wagons. You know, the M5 Touring is coming, Tyler, right? We just talked about the M5 Touring.
Wagons, they're cool.
He would love to put her into a Golf R or a V60 Volvo, but that is a tough sell. They live in Western Pennsylvania. She'll be traveling all hours of the day, so all-wheel drive would give them peace of mind during the winter. Not 100% necessary, but mostly they love to ski. They drive to New York, Vermont, and Maine to chase powder.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
The Xterra will be driven by their 16-year-old son, who gets his license here in July. So that is most likely staying, which is that's a great car for a first driver. They've also got a 2013 FRS. It's his daily car, his track car. It's on coilovers, nice wheels for the summer, but he switches it back to the stock struts with a 1-inch spacer lift and Blizzaks for the winter. And that's what he usually drives in the wintertime. They've also got a 2021 Ram 1500 to tow all their toys, the boats, the quad, the ski trips, dirt bikes. But it gets killer miles per gallon, which of course it does because it's a truck.
15, usually closer to 12 mpg. Hey, I've got an Expedition. I know your pain.
Yeah, right.
I know what that feels like. 12 uphill and 14 with a tailwind.
If you're lucky.
If I'm lucky.
The Macan is her daily driver, and they also take that on their ski trips when it's just the two of them. And sometimes when it's the three of them, it's what they take as a family.
Nice. Nicole. She's listening now. That's Tyler's fiance. Nicole, welcome to your debate. She's comfortable in Tyler's truck. If they end up going with a front-wheel drive car to replace the Macan, she could take the truck to work if there's snowstorms.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, he would drive the front-wheel drive car or the FRS if the snow is not too deep. Tyler mentions he's got an access to a lift, a tire machine, a balancer, scan tools, so he's able to do all their maintenance, which saves money, but he tries to avoid getting into the big stuff, the big projects. And he works at a fairly large auto auction, so he has an opportunity to drive a lot of vehicles and see all of the common faults. You also get to see prices the rest of us don't, Tyler. Mm-hmm.
And things that are coming up on the auction blocks for those, too.
I mean, maybe that's the thing that pushes you over. Can you bid? I mean, I know you can bid, but can you come away with something that nobody else is really going to know that it's a hidden gem and
yeah, right.
You come away with a screaming deal because that's what happened with that FRS. All right. If money were no object, he would replace the Macan with a Panamera. Of course, we all would. Or another Macan. But they're considering two different choices. Number one is replace the Macan with one single nice do-it-all vehicle that is better on gas, cheaper to maintain, and resist depreciation a little bit better. Tyler, you have mentioned depreciation throughout your email here, and I would say if that is high on your list, don't buy another car because they are...
Everyone's going to, yeah, they're all going to depreciate.
They just are. Even though I know they didn't used to, we just came out of an era in world history where they appreciated.
Briefly,
I realize that, yeah. But that's generally not the case. Now we're going the other way again. We're going back to normal, which I think we can all agree is a good thing. But yeah. If you're considering buying a new car, don't think, oh, I don't want it to depreciate quite so much. Because if that's the case, you'd never buy another car. We wouldn't have this disease and we couldn't justify anything.
Yeah. And cars are generally a terrible investment unless you're already wealthy and you can afford right. the...
They didn't used to be
cars that are already
for 2020 through 2023. They didn't used to be.
Yeah.
Buy anything used and sell it for more. And what is this world we're living in? So that included a Golf R, Mazda 3 Turbo, which I do like. That's the all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. I like that choice a lot. So go drive that. He had the TLX back on here. He says the back seat's big enough. He just sat in one. IS300, Accord 2.0. There is the new Accord that's out.
The new Accord's been nice.
And GLI.
Route 2 was a two-vehicle solution, something like a Prius, Volt, CT200H, etc., plus something a little more sporty for down the road, like Boxster, Cayman, Miata, 335i, etc.
Uh-huh, yes.
Vehicles they've considered but have ruled out are the Stinger and G70, worried about longevity, parts availability, and depreciation.
Maybe.
Audi, BMW, and Benz for similar reasons, mostly about depreciation. There's that word again.
Yeah, I was seeing that a lot.
EVs because of the infrastructure mainly. And the new WRX because the CVT is a deal breaker. They do come in a manual, but I'm guessing your wife's not so on board with manuals.
She had the aversion to that STI, and so I'm sure manuals are out. But that's okay.
Yeah. And the Integra, but that's on the list because a friend bought one, and they don't want to copy her. Which I understand.
Tyler realistically does not see any other vehicles besides the Macan leaving anytime soon. He's got a 2% interest rate on the truck. That is practically free money.
Yeah.
It's absolutely needed for all those other reasons, like towing the boat. They've got less than $4,000 into the Xterra, so that's fine. That's fine for your new driver. And he's got less than $9,000 into his FRS, including purchase price and mods, so... That is the fun car. That is sorted. That actually, Tyler, helped my decision-making because I wasn't trying to just get you into something now and then keep an eye on a Boxster or Cayman or something for you guys. You've got something now. If you want to add another fun car, it sounds like you've got storage for everything. And he did get this FRS for super cheap. Did you
Crazy
realize this?
Crazy cheap. I did see that.
This whole paragraph?
He wasn't sure about this when he first saw it. He said he saw a private listed sale on AutoTrader for $5,500 in 2021, which is just like, what? He thought it was a scam, but he went against his intuition and decided to reach out to the guy anyway. Turned out it was real. The car had 155,000 miles on it.
It's up there.
Which is a lot.
It's up there.
But it was a clean title manual. It's a 10 series, so he jumped on it. It's now got 190,000 miles on it, and he's only had to change a few things. Wheel bearing, idler, pulley, seatbelt buckle. That's kind of an odd one. But otherwise, it's just been routine maintenance, and he's switched the suspension out for track days. He goes to Pit Race, and he said if we're ever doing a Hooked on Driving event out there, he will gladly come.
That's fantastic. Our friends at One Lap of America actually just were at Pit Race 2 days ago, and they did great. That whole event has been going on, so hopefully you've been following that. The One Lap of America has been really cool. 80 cars in that event, and they were doing the pit race.
That's a good crowd.
So, Tyler, hopefully you saw that. Hopefully you realized they were coming through. And he says the car is amazing with coilovers, track pads, DOT-4 brake fluid. Yes, brake fluid is always key for track use. And now they come to the Macan because it's apparently depreciating like a rock. See, he's used to this depreciation theme here. Can you believe that great CUVs can be had for less than $20,000 if you're willing to stomach the repair costs? Well, yeah, that's why I wasn't really willing to stomach the repair costs on the Maserati, but still, it was cheap, and cheap was good.
And that's the thing about nearly 10-year-old luxury vehicles. They tend to just depreciate like rocks. Doesn't matter what brand it is, they almost all
I mean, we're back to that. They didn't used to.
Right.
Guess we are back to that. I think, have you seen prices stabilize? I mean, you look at Bring a Trailer, you look at stuff all the time.
It depends. Like on the more regular stuff, I think has, if not gone back to how it used to be.
Yeah.
The harder to find things are still, you know, people are still paying over for them, or the new cars people are still paying, because that's, but that was a thing before COVID too.
That's true. All right, Tyler, I've got choices for you, and I love your Mazda 3 Turbo. That is an all-wheel drive. It's an automatic. That's an excellent car. I am thinking about hybrids, and it just seems like these days getting into anything hybrid can mean that you're faced with a CVT, and you indicated that you didn't like CVTs and you don't like manual transmissions. Mm-hmm. However, I thought about the new Toyota Camry, because Todd and I just went to San Diego not long ago and drove it.
I have that on my list too, actually.
Oh, the new ninth generation?
I do, yeah.
No kidding.
Because you guys liked it so much, and it does fall even at the top trim, base price for the XSE, or yeah, XSE.
XSE is the sporty version and all-wheel drive in North America, yes.
And that top trim starts at 32.
I think ours was 36 fully loaded. Now, Tyler, it's hybrid only, and it does have an eCVT, but at the briefing, Toyota told us specifically it's not supposed to be annoying like the WRX and like Nissan products. Mm-hmm. They specifically worked on the drivability, specifically recharge brakes, the regen brakes. They wanted it to feel like just brakes, even though they are regenerative capability. They said, we worked hard on this just from a smooth drivability standpoint. They worked hard on the CVT, the engine, the power, and how it connects to the transmission, and just the overall drivability of the car, to the point where Todd and I never really noticed. I mean, we were searching for it, but it wasn't so annoying. Like, ugh, this is just like every other CVT. It has gotten better, and it's different in this car. Different enough that you should consider it.
And Todd talked about the brake pedal feel in that car specifically, about how Toyota was claiming that this feels like a normal car. And he was like, yeah, a lot of times car companies say things like that when they really don't. But he said, yeah, I was actually surprised that they were 100% right.
You know, overall drivability, it's all-wheel drive. It is reasonably priced. The styling is actually quite good. And there is just a mild, like a thimbleful of sportiness to be had in there that could be changed with tires. But Toyota is claiming 44 combined miles per gallon. On
almost
the
50 highway.
If you get 40, you're doing great.
Yeah.
If you get 38, it's within the specs that you're looking for, Tyler. So,
and it's regular gas, not premium, like the Macan would be.
Yes.
93.
Which also saves you money. Because of the infrastructure you're saying in your air, I think that EVs are not for you at this point. Even though you say Model 3s are tempting at the current prices, I really think the Camry, a hybrid, is really worth looking at. I've got the Hyundai Elantra hybrid on my list. Hmm. I did not think of a Lexus SUV that I like enough to recommend. But there is one SUV that kind of takes the place. I noted it was the same size as Todd's Cayennes, plural. He has a lot of them.
Yeah.
He collects Cayennes. It is the Honda CR-V Hybrid, the new one. It's more expensive. It's, I think, 44 grand. But it wasn't the fifth generation that was terrible. The vitriol that I have for that thing.
You really do.
It's made out of cardboard. I just hated it. So I came in a little cautious to the new one, and I really liked it. And the Cayenne and the CR-V were sitting there, and I thought, this is kind of Cayenne size. It will give you more space. It's the hybrid, so it gets better gas mileage, but it is quite good and it drives well. It's no sports car. It's no Macan, but you've got your sports car.
Yeah.
And it drives well enough that I'm wondering if your fiance will like it. It's a Honda. So I mean, here we are back to Honda and Toyota products, but I think they've come around so well that they're easy to recommend to you guys.
And hybrids right now are hanging on to their values, generally speaking. Hybrids and EVs are hanging on better than other cars. And also, brand new cars typically right now have lower interest rates too. So even though the cost of entry is higher, you'll probably be saving money in the long run, not only with your gas mileage and using regular gas, but also with a lower interest rate as well.
You'll have a warranty. You'll have, you know, you're going to be putting miles on this thing. It sounds like you're going to be keeping it longer. So therefore, you know, that also kind of justifies a newer car.
I had a couple other alternative options. The one's more of an oddball. The others, I think, are a little more interesting.
Why, is it a Lamborghini Urus or something?
No, it's an Infiniti.
Really?
The Infiniti Q50. Has that great engine.
Really?
We did like driving the one we had a few years ago. Overall, it wasn't a great, amazing, sporty car, but it had some nice punch to it.
Okay.
And it's comfortable inside. It's okay on gas, but it is a 300-whatever horsepower V6, so it's not going to be the best mileage.
Yeah.
But it'll have that nice place to be the Macan had.
That's true. They are nice. They are nice, yeah. Okay.
Also, the Alfa Romeo Giulia TI, you can get those all-wheel drive. That'll be a fun car to drive, decent on gas. You ruled out the Integra, but what about the Civic? Same thing.
Touring,
Sport.
Was a CVT, but it wasn't annoying.
It's not a terrible CVT. It's actually pretty decent.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. And those are like just under 30, I think, new.
Yeah, they're not bad. And then the last one I had, you said Panamera was your outright car, money object. You can find 70,000 mile Panameras all day long for 30 grand, 32 grand.
Really?
So they're not that far out there if they're out there. They're cheaper ones too, but 70,000 miles is probably, I'm guessing, probably similar to miles to your Macan based on your warranty you've got. I don't know. That could be an alternative. I don't know that that really gets away from... That really has better gas mileage, but it's still the Panamera that you're lusting after.
I wanted to recommend a Stelvio. We just drove that Competizione Stelvio. Mm-hmm. Tyler, they're 60K.
Yeah, that thing was sweet, though.
But it was sweet. I actually really liked, and I was kind of surprised thinking, like, it's just a whatever kind of thing. But the power is great. It's so interesting to drive. You want to double your budget and get a Stelvio? It's not the quad.
It does happen. People do it.
I'm just throwing that out there as this stupid wild card. It's a newly created
category.
You're
way out there, Paul. You're way out there.
Are you good on your list?
Yeah, that's okay. That's what I had. Yeah.
Well, you've still, Tyler, you've got quite a few choices there. You've got some shopping to do. Thank you for listening. Thank you for following the podcast and sharing that, Tyler. We really appreciate it. And Nicole, happy hunting. You've got some choices there as well. So go together and get something that you love to spend time in.
Yeah.
Because at any price level, we spend a lot of time in our cars and it's a big expense, low to high. This is something that dominates our lives, whether it's maintenance or the cost of purchase, cost of entry. So get something that you really love and you're going to have it a while. So make sure it's right. And don't listen to salespeople. Don't look at the nav and the stereo.
It doesn't matter how many airbags it has.
Power, whatever, and the safety. Yeah, they all have that. How does it drive? How do you look forward to being in your car? So we wish you happy hunting. If you've got a debate like Tyler and Nicole's, write to us everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving season is finally here, and our friends at Griot's Garage know your car is begging to be driven, and they have everything you need to keep it clean. Speed Shine has been Griot's most popular product since it was introduced in 1994. It's a great spray detailer and creates an excellent finish. We use it on every single shoot we do to make sure the cars look their best before they go on camera.
Ultra Premium Glass Cleaner allows us to get a completely clear, streak-free finish on any glass surface. It's exceptional at tackling any nose art that you might have from pets and kids and fingerprints and even food. Plus, summer is the time to use the awesome Boss Foaming System, which includes surface prep, surface wash, and polygloss. And now there's a cordless foaming sprayer available, which makes it easy to make your car look great. Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed. All liquid products are made in the USA.
So when you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 to save 10% off everything on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Get out there, drive your car, wash your car, and have fun in your garage. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
Justin G. writes to us from Houston, Texas. He's looking for a Baja for Sugarland.
This is going to be a fun one here.
This one's not nearly as long of an email as the last one, but he's... got a potential car debate for our consideration. Mid-sized Baja-focused vehicles are the perfect commuter vehicle for terrible urban roads. I live in Houston, Sugar Land area and commute to my offices on the north and south sides of the city. The surface streets that you have to use to avoid the malfunction junctions that is, our highway systems are terrible.
Mm.
As a result, I've been through 3 rims in 6 years. I'm guessing those are some pretty sizable potholes.
Yeah. Wow. We don't know what car. Do we know what car he's currently driving? I don't think we do.
No, we don't know what car he's got, and he doesn't give us a budget either.
Yeah, see, Justin, that was mistake number 2.
Yeah.
I mean, good for us. Not as good for your wallet.
We'll see why here in a second. But he wants a fun vehicle, but Houston doesn't have fun roads. Maybe fun can be had in expediting his commute by virtue of not having to crawl over the patches and holes littered along his path. The Raptor T-Rex AEVRHO.
That's the new, the Rhino or whatever, the new
inline six. And the TRD Pros are all too big for the cut, squeeze, and weave required for the combat that is rush hour traffic commuting.
Justin, this is very interesting. I think I have good choices for you, but again, we don't know what kind of vehicle you're looking for. We don't know what you're coming out of, if it's more car focused or if it's maybe an SUV, even though it sounds like SUV is something that would probably be ultimately better.
But you want something kind of zippy too, it sounds like.
Well, yeah, true. You know, the cross country, the V60 cross country came to mind, that Mercedes E450 all terrain, which I've seen one of in Park City. And I freak out because Mercedes wagon with cross country all road kind of look. And speaking of all road, the Audi A6 all road is pretty sweet.
Those are all big though.
They're all
big. I don't think those are any smaller. I mean, they're shorter, but I don't think they're any smaller lengthwise than the trucks that he listed.
Although if it's a zombie getaway car that you're looking for, Justin, I think I have it.
Hmm.
I've got the stupid wild card, which is that newly created category. I have decided you should look at the 2024 Toyota Land Cruiser.
Okay.
Because it's smaller in stature. It's the Prado, essentially, worldwide. In Europe and Japan, it's the Prado.
Yeah.
So it's smaller. And now the 1958 and the first edition have the round headlights. The regular Land Cruiser has the rectangular headlights. And speaking of power, it's got the iForce Max, 326 net combined horsepower, 465 pound-feet of torque. Because it sounds like you don't have to worry about crawling over stuff. You can just kind of go bashing with this thing.
Yeah.
They're less expensive than ever before. It depends on how you spec them, but we're talking 60 at the high end. They're no longer 90 and 23 combined EPS estimated fuel economy. Again, it's an SUV, I know, but you've got power and the thing moves and pivots like a smaller vehicle. The other stupid wild card that I had was to go build yourself like a zombie Prius getaway thing. You know that that site where we found one a while ago.
Yeah,
lifts for Prius and do some gnarly wheels and tires. It's a Prius commuter and it's lifted because nobody builds anything like that. There's no real safari. I mean, you can go the Sturato and the Dakar. And
yeah,
then
you're looking at $300,000.
I mean, unless your budget that you didn't send, Justin, just happens to be in Dakar land, then I would highly suggest a Dakar. But otherwise, go build yourself a brand new Prius, put a lift kit on it, put knobby wheels and tires, like Method wheels or something, and like...
Oh my gosh.
Dude. And then you can be like, you'll be the talk of Houston. I mean, come on.
You'd get attention, that's for sure. I don't know if it's the attention you want, but you'd get attention.
I don't know. I think the Land Cruiser is cool. I think it would really work for you.
But he says the TRD Pro is too big, and I don't know if he's talking about the Tundra TRD Pro or the Tacoma TRD
even
Pro.
So, the Land Cruiser is still not that big. It's not as big.
I haven't seen one in person.
It's not as big as you think. The last one was lumbering and beastly, and it is not. And it just feels lighter on its feet. That's the biggest thing. Mm. It's still a 5-seater. It's still a Land Cruiser, but it's the Prado size. It's not the larger 200 or 300 size. So anyway, just food for thought.
Interesting. Can I interest you in Tyler's Macan?
Solved.
I mean, done.
Mic
we could just
drop.
Hit and record right now, right?
That's interesting. It seems pretty well cared for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just
Tyler,
out
would
there.
You like to sell your Macan to Justin in Texas? That's a good idea.
I also thought, you know, Subaru Crosstrek. I don't know that that really fits quite what you're wanting, but it's lifted. It's smaller.
Yeah, it's a lifted wagon. It's a cool. Yeah. Anyway.
Also, I thought maybe Mini Countryman. Also kind of lifted.
That's interesting. I just kept thinking about the 3 rims that he's bent.
Yeah.
And anything, even that Volvo V60 cross country has like 20s on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool looking, but
Well, that's why I went with my other choice, which I think is probably out of the budget.
That's okay.
We don't know what the budget is.
We don't know what it is, so it's all it's all valid.
But what about an aerial nomad?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you want to commute and it's got big knobby tires. You're not going to bend any rims in that thing. You can zip through traffic, just go over traffic.
I recommend a Bell helmet and Aero Stitch to put over your suit while you're commuting.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty sure Aero Stitch is among the best, right? For the motorcycle gear.
Oh,
and then
I have no idea.
Wear your suit. And
it's probably
a buddy
not
of mine
so great
always,
in summer, though.
He always raved about Aero Stitch. I was like, okay, I'll keep that in mind. So, all right, you've got some gear to buy along with your Nomad, but also you would not go unnoticed.
It's true.
But every pothole, every like gravel kick up, splash of water, you'd get it.
Yeah.
But that's really cool.
But you can also buy, I don't have this on my list, but you can also get like someone's Baja Safari 911 for about half the price of a Nomad.
See, Justin, if we blow out your expectations, half the price of the crazy thing suddenly sounds reasonable.
Yeah, right.
We're here to help. I love your Nomad idea. I don't think ever has a Nomad been suggested on the podcast. That is excellent. Justin, you've got to at least look it up. Just at least entertain chance and go look at it. And if you get a Nomad, please, you know,
let us know.
Let us know, because we want to come drive it.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Well, thanks you for writing in and submitting all your questions this time. We've got a few of them to go through here. Seth Kleinman will kick it off. He says in the past that we've talked about how rubbery recent BMW transmissions feel. How far back do you have to go to find a BMW manual that feels good? Is a rubbery manual still better than a sharp-as-nails ZF 8-speed or PDK? I'm trying to think back. A couple years back, we did our Icon film, and all the cars we had on that piece were all...
More than a couple, but sure, we'll go with a couple.
It was a while now.
We'll go with a couple.
those were all manual cars,
mm-hmm.
And the only ones I really remember feeling rubbery were the newer ones. The M2 and the F80 or whatever.
I think it started with those two, where they started to have.
I don't remember the E46 feeling that way.
No,
but I will say the M2. This is me personally. I think that transmission, the manual, I hate it. That manual transmission, so rubbery.
Really,
it feels to me like you're using a toilet plunger to shift with. That's how much I don't like
Bummer.
It. Yeah, I really don't like it.
Although the Supra is really
the Supra's
good.
A lot better. Yeah, they fixed
quite
that.
Quite good.
They're supposed to be doing the same with the Z4. I guess they've gone through that to make it
That's
feel
right.
less rubbery,
too. That just got
announced. We haven't driven that yet.
Yes. It'd be the same one,
but,
right?
In the M2, I greatly prefer the DCT over the manual. I thought it made the car so much more enjoyable to me,
That's
which
crazy.
I don't say that very often because I prefer manuals.
Jake's on a Plane on Instagram asks if we think the reason people don't buy a wider variety of cars with colors is because manufacturers rarely charge extra for white and silver. Or are people just boring and genuinely prefer white? I don't think Jake's on a Plane that most people have really put serious thought to it. Most people are fine with white cars. They're fine with it. And maybe you do like white. I don't think it sets off cars. I don't think it makes it pretty. And I don't think people really think, you know what? I should really strive for a color. Sometimes it's just available inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when it's used, it's just, well, the price is right. Everything else is there. It's clean. It's low mileage. And it's gray. All right. But I think the more people push for these colors, it's very big on car manufacturers' radar. Look at what they're naming car colors these days. Mm-hmm. We've joked about it a lot, but they're starting to come up with slightly clever names. Let's keep encouraging that. They called that Jeep 392 the gray.
Mm-hmm.
They call it Earl, as in Earl Grey tea.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that now.
It's just Earl. Or, you know, I think we need to push. I posted a photo of this Okra GT paint on the Alphas that RSR has. It's a deep gold, metallic gold. It's a tri-coat paint. And I think they were just for North America, but we're seeing them all over the world now, which is great. And it just sets it off. It just makes that car so much more special. I'm not saying your Subaru Outback generally has to be painted in something amazing because they don't offer amazing colors, but they offer the colors that are in the palette of the target car. They offer earth tones for Outbacks and, you know, sophisticated, subdued, you know, candy colors for Astons and, you know what I mean?
There's definitely that. I think it's the dealers to blame, to be honest. The dealers order their inventory. They're the ones that
you've had experience of dealers with this.
I think a lot of it is resale driven for them. They get a lot of leases and then they want to be able to turn around and sell them. And they tell people that silver, white, black is what sells easier. They can, which maybe that's true. Then we're just all driving the same boring cars. Whereas I think to your point, a lot of it is maybe someone does want a color, but it's harder to find. So you just buy what's available. Whereas I'll use my grandma as an example, actually. She's no longer driving, but the last car she bought was a Honda Fit.
Okay.
And she had always, her entire life, had wanted to buy a red car. So she hunted for a red car and bought a red Fit. And she loved it.
That's fantastic. You've got some questions on Discord. I noticed that.
I do. I've got Mock Plane. He's asking, as a racing photographer, how much access do racetracks usually give you? There's kind of multiple levels to this. Generally speaking, when I'm going, I've got media credentials. So I've got a vest I wear and I have more access than if I bought a ticket to the race or whatever. So you can usually be up against the Armcos instead of behind the fence. There's there's a big gap. So you have the same kind of access as the corner workers have. You can't typically get up into the corner marshal stands. They don't like that so much, but you can
really
be right in front of them and
But
that's the kind of access you get. Most tracks are a little bit different. They'll typically give you a specific map meant for photographers that shows you various things like where the photo holes are and the catch fences, where you are allowed to be, where you're not allowed to be, how you can get to certain places, what the gate codes are, and that kind of stuff. And some tracks have free roam, you can go wherever you want, and others are they'll have big areas that you're just not allowed to be for safety reasons or what have you, or access. The most interesting and kind of insane that I've dealt with, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I covered the 25 hours of Thunderhill.
Oh, that's right.
And that is the only track that I know of that you are allowed to cross the track while the race is going.
That's so gnarly.
Which I did. Partly to say I did it, but you get more access by going into the middle of the track. Not every track lets you do that even when it's cold, but you were only allowed to do that at the start stand. You had to get their attention, and they'll spot for you and say, okay, you can go. You've got tons of room, time, get your button gear and get across the track. Same with coming back. You've got to wait, and they wave you over.
Still, though, that's...
Which is, it's scary. Really, you got cars scary. Going down that long. I mean, you've done that straight away. It's long.
Holy cow. All right. Over on Facebook, Carl Schultz is back to feeding the disease. By feeding the disease, he's shopping for a daily. So the question is about our discussion about infotainment systems, specifically Lexus, Mercedes, maybe Toyota, and how they've improved a lot in recent years. What should we as buyers be looking for to avoid buying something with the terrible interfaces? Are there years you can look for, controls you can see in photos? It really depends on the car, because Porsche was late to the game. I think it wasn't until 2017 that they started putting Apple CarPlay in anything. I mean, one of Todd's Cayennes, just kidding. The 2017 that they have does, I believe, but he had to install in the prior 2010. But different car companies moved at a different pace. And they were all deciding, all right, which tech company are we going to partner with? And maybe some of them tried something. Because for a while, Carl, back in 2012, that Q system from Cadillac was just awful.
Same with the old, what was the BMW one? iDrive. That was terrible too, with the rotating knobs.
They're like on iDrive version 8 now, and it's definitely better. But you're going to have to do it car by car, because it also depended on the model. The more luxurious, the higher end, it was optioned that way, the lower stuff. Whereas now, every inexpensive car has just Android Auto, Apple CarPlay, and a backup camera. They just do. You know, all those things that we're used to in modern cars, I look for it. And if you don't have it... In Volvos, you still have to use a cord, a cable to plug in to access Apple CarPlay on 2024 Volvos, which, believe me, that is annoying, but that's a corporate decision that none of us are in control of. There's no actual Bluetooth-based Apple CarPlay connection. So like I said, it depends on the car, but generally speaking, anything 3 to 5 years back from now is pretty safe. That's when most manufacturers have implemented something decent. You know, Hyundai's and Kia's had stuff immediately. Great. So did Toyota's. So did, well, Lexus didn't, but you know, they've kind of solved that now. The IS 500, love that car. It still has the old interface
is terrible.
And that just is such a deal killer. The engine's brilliant and the inside is like, ugh.
Well, and so much of it's personal too. Like we all have our own.
Yeah.
Some of us will get some of those systems faster than others. Others of those systems are you set it once and you forget about it. The current one that we all don't like is the Volkswagen system is terrible. But I've talked to several owners of them and they all, it's great. They like it. It's like,
okay,
I guess you get used to it.
If that's your jam, okay, then yeah, cool. Exactly. Agreed. So you're going to have to look, Carl, and do some shopping. Mercedes, the Command system was okay. And then they went to the M-Bucks and now they're moving on from that. But those have been excellent and those have been around for a while. Even the Uconnect system in my 2015 Jeep Cherokee was great. And they've improved it from then. I mean, I say great after they replaced it.
It was great up until it wasn't.
Under warranty. I mean, every Uconnect system that we've had in any Stellantis product has been generally great. Mine had to be replaced, but that was like way a decade old, but whatever.
I've got two hockey questions. Can I go there again?
Do it.
RIP Stinger, he's asking, he wants to know, me as a hockey player, what levels have I played at? Did I play any beer leagues? Beer leagues is the nickname for amateur hockey, by the way. I don't know where that came from.
What does that have to do with beer?
I have no idea. I guess you play hockey and you'll drink beer when you're done. I don't know. I don't drink, okay. So I don't know.
I don't play hockey.
My hockey skill only goes back to like on ice this year, last year, I guess. But being a hockey fan, I started my fifth grade teacher in school was obsessed with all things Canada. And so we learned geography and some of the national history and things like that, which
like
makes so much sense in Arizona.
Line?
There was. the field trip we went on was to an Arizona Coyotes game.
Of course.
And so we'd go to the games and we'd tour the arena beforehand. And one such trip, we were down by the locker rooms and the players of the visiting team had come off the ice and they walked past us and they acknowledged us. They waved even though they're the road team. They were like saying hi and things to the kids, okay, which was cool.
Okay.
Left an impression on me. That team ended up winning that game.
Okay.
That team is the jersey I'm wearing right now, the Dallas Stars. So I've been a Stars fan since I've been in fifth or sixth grade.
Just never know.
And you never know. But back then we had a minor league hockey team in Tucson that lasted a year and a half before they went bankrupt. But my teacher had some sort of in, knew the team owner or a coach. I don't know how that all worked, but she got some of those minor league hockey players to come to our school and talk, and they brought some makeshift boards and a goal and some sticks, and we had a pickup game on the basketball court. And so most of my hockey history, I guess, has come from that. I started playing on rollerblades on that basketball court afterwards, got my own stick, but it was only me. Because hockey's not big in Arizona, if you didn't know.
Crazy.
It's part of why a team's moving, I guess.
Can't imagine the reasons why.
But when I was in college, they had intramurals ice hockey at BYU Idaho, where I was going at the time. I went and tried to play once and quickly realized I have no clue what I'm doing, and that ended my ice hockey skill for a long time. But more recently, I learned that at not only one of them, but several of the hockey rinks here, skating rinks, they've got skills clinics and leagues. And so I've joined a adult skills clinic. I'm learning how to play more. I'm starting up again actually today. And so I'm excited for that. This is my second one. It's 10 classes, 10 one-hour classes. And we usually end with a pickup game afterwards. And I'm joining a team in the fall. So I'm excited.
That's amazing. I'm really excited that you're picking that up and moving forward with it, man. That's cool.
But the other question that's tied to it, Carpain Diem is asking, since there's a Utah hockey team now, am I going to turn away from my Dallas Stars or am I going to stick with them?
Well, a Utah hockey team from your hometown of
Arizona. I know. It's a weird situation because it's my old hometown team.
So were the Stars.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they were the away team. But
yeah.
Still.
So I used to only go to the Coyote games to go see the Stars play. So I've got kind of a weird connection. But I will say having grown up in Arizona, I was actually a baseball fan. I was an Atlanta Braves fan in the early 90s.
Okay.
Because we got cable TV, and I would come home from school and I found baseball on TV. I was like, I didn't know this was a thing. We had WGN and TBS. So we had the Chicago Cubs and the Atlanta Braves. The Cubs sucked and the Braves won the World Series that year.
There you go.
So when you're 8 years old, that's what you go for, right?
Seared in your brain.
But then 3 years later, the Arizona Diamondbacks became a team and I just made the switch. But I was, you know, a preteen, so it's a little easier to do than you're an adult.
Have you ever seen that clip with Randy who hit the bird with the ball?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that just came across a feed somewhere. It was like the anniversary of that game or something. Uh-huh. And it was gnarly.
Yeah, he threw a pitch right as a bird went right in front of it, got nailed by the ball. I think it's the only time it's ever happened in history.
It exploded into dust.
And that's one of the many things that Randy Johnson's been known for.
Crazy.
That the ballpark that happened in was down the street from where I worked my first job. That was a spring training facility. So I'd get off work around noon. Games would start at 1. So every day for spring training, I would go to the games. And I became a bat boy for 2 of the years, which was really,
really
cool. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's cool. Well, Randy Johnson is relevant because post-baseball career, I have seen him as a photographer. Mm-hmm. In pit row at the Long Beach Grand Prix, and everybody knows who he is. So he's trying to not talk baseball. Yeah. And he's like, I'm a photographer. I'm a motorsports photographer.
Baseball's his past. He fully admits that. He's like, baseball's not my life anymore. I do this.
Yep. But cars are his thing. And he's this, you know, giant guy walking around the paddock. It's like, who's that? Well, of course.
Ironically, I think he does a lot of aviary photography now too. Like
does he really?
Stuff. Yeah.
Of course. It all fits together. On Instagram, Marvin47 appreciated our questions and discussion on the most recent podcast about self-driving cars as a tool for accessibility. That is near and dear to my heart, Marvin. It's great to combat any gatekeeping we can to cars and understand everybody has different preferences, you're right, and needs for transportation. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin's curious if we both have any thoughts or experiences on driver aids for limited mobility folks. I do have experience. Whether you're a car enthusiast who loves to drive and lost that ability, or he says there's a lot of really interesting tech like hand controls that are used, but there's still a niche thing that he hopes to see expanded. I certainly agree. It's the van by Kersey Mobility up in Washington that my dad uses, and I've been admittedly pretty frustrated because, Marvin, that van, you think they raise the van. This is for wheelchair mobility. They actually cut the floor and lower the floor. I didn't think that was possible. But sure enough, they cut it and lower it about a foot.
Is it that much?
Yes.
Wow.
But they also completely screw with the entire wiring harness.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it works because you've got to hook up the key fob and the automatic doors along with an automatic ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tie downs in there are really great. I mean, that system really does work well. There is no hand mobility controls, but the seat swivels so you could pull yourself out of the wheelchair and pull yourself into the driver's seat. But my dad's no longer able to do that. So we just use it as transportation, just kind of the family van. But that wiring harness is, once you clip into a wiring harness, it is screwed forever. I don't care how good the tech coating is. I don't care how good the build is.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you clip into a factory harness, you are screwed. That is it. And that has been proven time and again. So I would like to see manufacturers offer a bit more of that, but again, they're not a charity organization. I hate to say it. They want to make profit. Mm-hmm. And so what's the profit? That's why it's always left to third party companies, Marvin, to do something like this. And there are a proliferation of that. And I think we'll only see it get better. Autonomy is that promise. But for me, it's the promise of opening up mobility to so many people around the world. It's not just, hey, autonomy is cool so I can read a book or sleep while I'm driving. That I don't care about. That doesn't interest me. But mobility for people who need it, that is the sweet spot for autonomy, in my opinion.
Well, they've also used, I keep thinking of hand controls and things like this. RSR has a hand control car.
That's right.
I forget what it is.
That's right.
I think it's like an M235 or something. But they've got one or two hand control cars so that people can go and experience the Nürburgring that can't drive otherwise, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I also think about Alex Zanardi. Remember his story?
Yeah.
IndyCar driver, lost his legs in a nasty accident, and then he does all these amazing athletic things anyway. He did the Daytona Rolex 24 a few years ago with the hand-controlled. It was a BMW race car, factory race car, that they modified so that it had hand controls for him that he could use, but then it retained its normal controls for everybody else to use. It was all paired to
for the rest of the team.
Yeah, for his co-drivers. It was all paired to his steering wheel. So when they plugged in his wheel, it knew to change some things.
Fantastic.
So he had, I don't remember how it all worked, but he had a downshift paddle on the wheel, and then gas and brake were hand controls of different types, and it was really cool. And he did pretty well. It was sad that I don't think they ended up finishing the race. They had some other issues, but when he was on track, he was booking it.
The guy is fast, and he was in wheelchair competitions, races as well. I think he got seriously injured not too long ago.
It was like a biking accident, I think.
Yeah, wishing him continued recovery for that.
How that came out, but Rain on Rooftop asks me, when I'm photographing different cars, angular versus smooth flowed lines, do I have a different approach? Not necessarily a different approach per se, but there are different, the way the light reflects off the car can cause different reflections and different hot spots for the sun, where the sun hits the car specifically, where it has that kind of starburst look, which I try to avoid. So sometimes you have to fight your way around to see where that sunspot disappears, and that can dictate the angle you take pictures from.
Guys, thank you for all your questions. Chance, thank you for jumping back on the podcast with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
It's always nice, and we've got always good debates. Write to us, Topic Tuesdays, Car Conclusions, and most of all those car debates, so we know what you're thinking about, know what you're shopping for. Thank you for your patronage. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to Todd's new car. That reveal is coming soon. And more content this year. We've got a lot planned, so stay tuned. We're always looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.